The Feel Better Station for Warrington Hospital.
This is Radio General.
Now, the final hooter.
Yes, it certainly is the final hooter. I'm Dave Parkinson, joined by Mr. Steve Manning this evening. Thanks for coming in, Steve, and helping us out.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks for inviting me, Dave. It's been a while, hasn't it?
It has been a while, yeah. I mean, I know we see each other quite a lot on the rugby league scene, and, you know, we get out and about quite a lot together, don't we? But, yeah, it's been a while since we've had you in the studio, mate, so it's good to have you here in person.
Yep, looking forward to it, Dave.
So, what have we got coming up? It's a bit of a packed show because we're going to be talking State of Mind round. We're going to have a little bit of audio from the world record attempt last week that was held at the Halliwell Jones Stadium at Warrington. We'll hear from Dr. Phil Cooper. We'll also hear from Ian Knott as well. We've got some championship reaction from Kieran Pirtle. We have some Super League reaction from Daryl Powell. But before we get to any of that, and we've got a couple of special interviews which you've gone and got today with none other than the new Super League Supremo, Rob Elston.
Hot off the press, yeah.
Hot off the press. Hotter than a hot thing in Hotland. and also you had a chat with St Helens chairman Eamon McManus as well.
Yeah, that's right. Ian Lennigan was there. Eamon McManus, and it should have been Neil Udgill, but I'm assuming his car got stuck somewhere on the M62 corridor.
It's tough to say.
It was the Warrington owner, Simon Moran, was there, but Simon let Eamon, Ian and Mr. Elston take over, albeit somebody did ask him a question, as it were, and he'd been listening, and he answered that question eloquently and swiftly. Sideways onto Robert Elston to finish off what the answer was. So, but it's interesting. It was an interesting day. It was a long day. You know what it's like, Dave, working to get the one on ones. Yeah. It was frustrating at some stage, but it's done. And like I say, if whatever any serious rumour was going on, it was all brought out to the public domain now. So all these little snippets that we keep reading in the trade press, it's all out for everybody now.
So we'll come to that in just a little while, Steve. Okay. I wanted to start first of all with Betfred League One, which reached round 12 last weekend. So there were wins for Bradford Bulls, for Oldham, for Doncaster, for Hunslet, for Newcastle Thunder, for Hemel Stags and the York City Knights. Now, the game that I just wanted just to mention a little bit more here is Oldham, because they've gone about their business really stealthily over the last few weeks. I think they're now on 6 successive wins, and they've climbed their way gradually up that table, sitting currently in 3rd spot, just a couple of points difference between them and York City Knights, and just 4 points behind the leaders, Bradford Bulls.
Yeah, I've been looking at that now, Dave, and you know, I read the trade press, and really it's all been about this season to date, about Bradford, about York, especially after that record victory they had, and Doncaster as such. But, you know, like you say, Oldham have just gone about their work very, very quietly, and that's a good sign if you're Oldham, but the problem is at some stage the sides above them and the sides around them are going to think, We've got to watch these. We've got to get a result.
I mean, to be fair, I mean it's a really competitive league, because I mean you go down to what, 9th, 10th place, where Newcastle Thunder are with 12 points, and then you've got a logjam of 3 teams on 14 points, Hunslet and Doncaster on 16 points, just below Oldham. So you know, there's not much leeway there, is there, for error?
No, you mentioned Newcastle, and they had a great win over Whitehaven, because Whitehaven turned over one of the contenders a few weeks ago. So
yeah, they beat York, didn't they?
That's it. So it's like any division, isn't it? It's a case of being consistent, and from a Whitehaven point of view, no disrespect to the fact that they were going to Newcastle Thunder, they must have thought, well, this is going to be 2 points there. But fair play to Newcastle Thunder, and they're doing very, very well, aren't they? They're rebuilding. They're obviously playing where the Falcons play, and things are going well for them, aren't they?
Do you also feel as perhaps the news that has affected Whitehaven over the last couple of weeks about them having a deficit of $60,000 in the budget, do you think that has played on their minds over recent weeks as well?
I think it has. I mean, I know the players will say that it doesn't, but they're all each respective town in Cumbria, each respective rugby league playing town in Cumbria, it's tight-knit, isn't it, as such, and you know, they'll be aware of it and they'll be wondering, well, at the end of the day, first of all, are they going to get their, you know, paid, you know, for their endeavours on the field? And it's worrying times, isn't it? You know, it's, you know, Workington, you know, at the beginning of the season or just before Leon went to the club, they were having problems, but somehow, because of probably of who he is and some of the players he's brought in, everything's going well there. But having said that, with the players that they have got in the squad, and I'm assuming they've got sponsors for these players or whatever, again, you said how tight it is. They were like with a cluster of clubs on 14 points. You'd have expected them to be in the five, wouldn't you?
And
or,
to be fair,
or challenging up for the top two, wouldn't you?
And to be fair as well, I mean, they got battered at the weekend by York City Knights, 40-8. So, you know, that's not a result to be sniffed at as well. If you're a York City Knights fan, they're going particularly well at the minute, aren't they? James Forward's doing a fantastic job.
Well, yeah, and he's also involved now with the England Academy squad. I think that are going to play in the two Test series. First of all, against France. And then the icing on the cream on the icing. No, I've got that all wrong. Icing on the cake, is it?
That's the icing on the cake, yeah.
You can tell we're live.
The cherry on top of the cake. That's the one, isn't it? Let's go with that one.
Yeah, yeah. Ian Hartog, Mary Baron. He said Mary Baker then. Mary Berry. That should be fantastic. Unfortunately, I'm away on warm weather training in Lanzarote when those games are going on. So I'm a bit gutted. Mm. But I know you've been to a few. I mean, I was lucky enough when I first started doing media work with Rugby League to do the commentary on the two test win series in 2000 when Mike Gregg was in charge, when the arrogant Australians were going for their 100th consecutive win. And it's the first time they'd ever beaten them in a two test series, and that was fantastic. But I know you like watching them, you like me, you like seeing what's coming through, the talent that's coming through, whether they be Australian or whether they be British.
Very much so. I mean, from the last tour, the big standout from that particular one was Latrell Mitchell, who since has become a superstar of the NRL, hasn't he?
Yeah, I'm simple.
But yeah, so I mean, some great rugby being played at Betfred League One level, moving up to the Championship, and again, wins at the weekend for Barrow Raiders, for Featherstone Rovers, for Lee Centurions, for Swinton Lions. A real telling victory, that one, for Swinton. For Toronto Wolfpack at home in front of over 7,000 spectators. And for Toulouse Olympique, gaining some revenge on Batley Bulldogs, who beat them a few weeks ago over at Mount Pleasant.
Yeah, it's that division is a competitive division. I'll nail my mask to the colours, Dave. I cover the Lee Centurions for a particular publication, and I know you cover them for another particular publication. And it's great that we actually get something right, i.e. the penalty count.
Shh, don't go giving out the secrets.
but it's fantastic, isn't it? I mean, Lee, from Lee Centurions... We'll be talking about that one later, or are we doing that now?
You're my guest.
All right,
if you want to go with that one, that's all right.
Very briefly, we'll talk about it later on, especially with the interview that you've got coming up. Lee Centurions, they had an abysmal start, and that's been polite, which cost Neil Dukes his job at the club.
You say this, but he resigned.
Yeah, but...
He resigned, he didn't get pushed. So, you know, he's made that decision to step out of there.
Well, all right, then. So he wasn't pushed. He decided to do the right thing. He fell on the sword.
Yeah, he fell on the sword.
And Kieran Pirtle came in, and slowly but surely he's got it together. They've had a fantastic run, and it was unfortunate what happened at the Summer Bash. How crucial that penalty kick miss may be in the long term, only time will tell. But that was a fantastic game. I mean, if talk about Blackpool Bash, that was what you call literally a roller coaster game.
Oh, it was. I'm going to come up with a well-trotted statement here and say it was a game of two halves for me. The first half was very close, very competitive in this one between Lee and Halifax. The sides for me didn't show the full wares in that first half.
You think they were sussing each other?
Yeah, they kind of bashed each other through the middle, didn't they, an awful lot. And if you look at the tries that were scored, they were both pushovers from dummy half, weren't they? You know, or quick darts.
The first half was competitive, and then the second half... And they went, I'll be quite honest, they went 12 points up, and I thought, oh, sugar, the worst to that effect. And then something happened that I think we better not talk about. And then all of a sudden, what the response was, 24 points for Lee. And you start thinking to yourself, well, that's it, game over, 10 minutes left. The problem is, score another try. But they came back, scored two cracking tries. And I'm thinking to myself, they've got some out, they've got to get a win from somewhere. And when the ball went down that left wing, with the way that they'd been playing, I thought, yeah, pushed in touch. What's he doing? Dancing down that wing. What did I know? Beautiful inside ball to Craig Garland. His angle drawn under the sticks. But it was fantastic theatre. And I watched a Challenge Cup tie a couple of weeks ago, and I thought that was one of the best games I've seen this season. But that was absolutely... It had everything, Dave.
It was the second half where things really opened up, helped very much by Scott Morell, who's still a fantastic player at the Championship level.
You know, he made one big error, didn't he? But after
I was going to say, you know, like he kicked for the first two tries that Halifax scored in the second half. Then he really did pull them back into the game, got them in front. You're right, because Lee then got on the forefront, didn't they, and started running in some scores of themselves. And there was one particular one where Mirrell went for a short restart, which we both questioned at that particular moment in time, because there was about 15 minutes left. And at that time, you thought, oh, that's the game to Lee. But credit Halifax. I mean, they came back superbly. And like you say, it took a try of real quality to actually settle the game, didn't it?
Yeah.
I think we'll now hear from Kieran Pirtle, the new Lee head coach. Can we still say that? He's been in the job for a little while, but he's only had it confirmed as being the official head coach for about 3 weeks now.
It was a bit of psychology, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. But here he is giving his thoughts after that victory against Halifax.
Just how big a win was that, Kieran?
Well, it's a massive win for us. You know, we know every game's a must-win game. You know, we have to keep chipping away at it. We're winning games, but we don't seem to be moving up that table. So, you know, every game, no matter who we play, is a must-win for us if we want to get in that top four. And you know, the season's coming to an end pretty quick now. We've still got some big games in front of us. You know, I thought Halifax were terrific today. And you know, Richard Marshall's doing a great job there with those guys. And I thought we got out of jail a little bit. You know, we weren't at our best, but we got a win out of it, which is a pleasing thing.
What were your thoughts at 18-6 early in that second half, and everything you did seemed to go wrong?
Yeah, it did. I actually didn't think we defended too bad, you know, even though we're behind, you know, a couple of kicks, ricochets and a try from dummy half. But apart from that, we weren't too bad. But we spoke about our composure and our attitude and grinding ourselves back into the game. And I think we did that. And, you know, we showed some good character to come back from behind twice in the game as well.
What was the catalyst of that point spree after that?
I think, you know, Liam Wood was fantastic today. He's been good all year. You know, I thought he was good. He got our up going forward and injected a bit of pace and energy to us as well.
Were you a bit worried when they got back to 30-all?
I've been a bit worried all the game there. You know, it was to-ing and fro-ing, and it's probably what we've done all year. You know, we didn't start the year great. Then we give ourselves a chance, and then we kind of took our foot off a little bit and then give ourselves a chance, and the game was about that today. We kind of invited them into it and put ourselves under pressure a lot of time. And you know, we have a big game at Toulouse next week, and we need to be smarter in all aspects of the game.
That first half, a little bit of a hangover from the last two defeats, did you think?
Maybe. You know, sometimes you need, you know, we've had some good wins, some, I suppose you'd say, pretty wins over the last few weeks before, you know, before the last two, and scored a lot of points, and we've not really won any games ugly or come from behind. So to do that for us, you know, we'll take the positive from that. But we're realists. We know we need to improve as well.
How hard is it going to be in these next 4 or 5 weeks, Kieran? Every game's away now.
Yeah, it is. You know, it's nothing we didn't know about. It happens every year at this stadium. You know, that's not in our control, but you know, it's a challenge for us. It's a challenge at the beginning of the year, which we knew we would have to go to as well. So we have to be up for it. We have to prepare for it. You know, and we need everyone on board and staying focused as well.
It is an interesting challenge for the Centurions. They've got this glut of away fixtures coming up now.
They have. I would like to be positive and say they'll win every one. I think at the moment that the Wolfpack have got the wood over them, but I think if they can get a result at Toulouse this coming weekend, it'll be a big bonus for them. I know it sounds awful, even a point, but as long as they can come away with something, because I know they've got to go to Toronto, and I'd like to be positive and say that I think that they'll win over there, but I don't think they will. But then they've got the other away games, and I have this feeling that a lot of this, it's going to come to points difference.
Mm.
The last two games are at home, and no disrespect to the sides that they play, and the sides that if push comes to shove and they need to get the points up, you know, the points difference up, those could be the two games, and that could make the difference. You know, we don't like runaway wins, do we? Yeah, we do. No, we don't.
Depends on the situation, really,
yeah,
doesn't it?
Yeah, you know, you want competitive games, and you want speckies, want wanting watching a competitive game. But if that's what it needs, that's what it needs. Whatever happens, because of what we're going to be talking about later, it's important, and important with a capital I-M-P-O-R-N-T-A-N-T.
So you've actually capitalised the entire word there. Is it that important?
That's how important it is. Right, okay. They've got to get into the four because of what's coming up from next season onwards.
I mean, you do look at the Championship, and we've spoken about how competitive League One is, and you certainly get that feeling with the Championship as well. Take Toronto out of the mix because they're runaway leaders at the moment.
Yeah.
But if you look beneath them, Toulouse have shown on occasion that they can be a little bit flimsy in defence. Featherstone score a lot of points, but also concede a lot of points. Halifax, they're very, very competitive and currently sitting in that fourth position. And then you've not got much breathing space between London Broncos and Lee Centurions in fifth and sixth. So really, it's like four teams into two spots, isn't it?
It is. It's, I mean, it's a great testament, the fact that Halifax's budget is unbelievably small compared to the big hitters, i.e. your Lee Centurions.
They've done tremendously well. Yeah. Tremendously well. I mean, they're actually developing their own players as well with the Reserve League, but don't get us onto Reserve Leagues. I have my own opinion of that.
Right. I don't.
That's for a later show, I think, but I just feel that every side should be having a reserve team. That's the way I was brought up, and watching Reserve Rugby, first of all, before...
I concur with it, Dave. And if and when it does come in, they've got to call it Reserve League, because I know we always talk about, you know, with some of the people who've... a little bit more senior than ourselves about the A teams and the B teams.
We're just young ones, Steve. We're young ones.
We're young ones, yeah. You'll do for me there, Dave. And, you know, you've got to call it a reserve league, because the stigma then, I know what it was all about, you know, you learn your trade, a youngster coming through, you know, some old heads and stuff like that, and that's how good it was. But it's like, if you call, you know, the stigma of like A, it is like not the main team. So they've got to make sure that what we're talking, it is the reserves. And I'm quite believed that... every Super League side should have a obviously first team, a reserve side, an academy side, and they already have the scholarship, so they've got everything that they need.
Oh, don't get me started about scholarships. I think they're the blight of rugby league at this moment in time.
Well, I do,
and I will say if they're a blight, because it's taking players away from their amateur clubs, and it's giving them false hopes and false impressions.
Well, all of a sudden, they think... They think I am an X player, or I am a Y player, or I am a whatever player.
They're only on the first rung of the ladder, really, aren't they? And that's a slippery rung, that, isn't it?
Well, put it like this. At that, they are, and even at the next age group up, because I do, as it were... Yeah, I'm involved doing academy.
Yeah,
with
you see a lot of
team.
Academy rugby, don't you?
And at the moment, I've tried getting hold of somebody for the academy programme. On one occasion, rang him three times, or contacted him three times, and he's custard pied me, Dave, and I'm thinking...
Hang on, is that Wigan speak for sidestepping?
Yeah, sidestepping, yeah.
Right, okay.
Sorry about that, listeners. And it's Wigan. It's Steve Manning, it's not Wiganese.
I was going to say nothing there, mate.
And I'm thinking, I've interviewed, you name him, I've interviewed him, who's come through the system, and I'm not being a bigot at all, Dave, you know, he's come through the system for over a decade at St. Helens, and then they've moved on to wherever they've moved on to. And I've got a young kid there, and all I'm doing is a pen pick so they can, like, promote him, the fans can see where he is at the moment, where he's going, in case he goes through that next step. And they've read about him, and I couldn't get through, he ignored me. I got one text saying, pal... Well, I'll tell you. Well, I guess I don't want to end up at this station going off the air.
No, we'll move on then quickly before you say anything else that may later be regretted elsewhere. Let's move on to the Super League. Great result for Catalans Dragons this weekend. A whopping victory for Hull FC. Huddersfield Giants coming up with perhaps a surprise result. St Helens, a formulaic result against Hull Kingston Rovers. Wakefield Trinity having a resounding win. And and Castleford Tigers also edging to a narrow victory against Warrington. Your pick of those games, Steve?
The pick of those games, for the result-wise, the pick of the games, really, was Castleford Tigers winning at Warrington after what Warrington had done the previous week to the Pies. But the result, to me, even though that... Leeds Rhinos aren't the team that they were, with Huddersfield Giants going to Leeds and getting a result there, which puts them now to Leeds Rhinos on was the 7th. Huddersfield Giants the 3rd have got 13 points, 2 behind. And just below them, the team that I think will somehow get into the 8th is Catalan Dragons on 12 points after that win over Widnes Vikings when they were 10-0 down after about 10 minutes. And I don't like the style of the play that Catalan Dragons play.
It's very direct and forward orientated, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a bit dull.
But Tony G goes a genius, and as long as they keep him fit, I think that they couldn't get into there. But, you know, it's so competitive. And in relation to Wakefield Trinity Wildcats, apart from Wigan,
they're not Wildcats anymore.
I forgot, yeah. They're not. They're just the
Trinity. They're Wildcatless,
and they're playing well Wildcatless. But every time I tip them win, they lose. And every time I tip them lose, they win.
I'm going to follow what your tipping is then and go the other way.
I said to somebody last week on a programme, I'm going to take Wigan by 10. But so in that case, I said Wakefield will win. And I laughed it off. And then look what happened.
Never trust your tip, Steve. In fact, I'm going to get whatever you've put forward and then submit mine.
The most boring game of the weekend was... Now, I was at it, and I think, as you know, I'm not sure about the little one, I do the audio commentary at St Elders, I've been doing it for over a decade. That was the most boring game I've ever done.
And I mean,
they were 12-0 up at St Elders within 10 minutes, and you think,
you're one of the most enthusiastic men I know in rugby league.
But it was hard, Dave, it was hard work, because we do it in 10-minute segues, and then we've got all this where there's all this slowing down, and I criticise it twice, and then it just went on and on and on. And I just said to the co-commentator,
take the mic off.
Give me the mic back when we start again.
Two more tries there for Benny Barber, though, who's now up to, I think, is it 19 tries in Super League now?
Yeah, and he had one shot, haven't he? Looked good for my angle. Right. But having said that, you know, we were some distance away. But he didn't really... Believe it or not, Dave, he really didn't do all that much, you know, from his own high standards.
That's,
I mean, again in the cup tie, you know, he didn't really do much in the cup tie, but, you know, but what he does do, he's got the opposition watching him, because they're all expecting that ball to go to Benny Barber. Now, if you're focused on that, it's a great situation if he's in your team, because you can use him as a foil half the time, and if you're all focusing on that player, they can flick it out to who they need to flick it out to and get tries from a different angle.
Right, you mentioned before that your result of the weekend in Super League was that one that saw Castleford Tigers pick up a 34-30 win at Warrington. This is very brief, but this is Daryl Powell's appraisal of that particular game.
I think it sends out more of a message to us, and that's the one I'm interested in, really, is that we believe that we can do something special this year. The one thing we are going to have is, when we've gone really well, 2-14, and last year, where we've been a really dangerous team, we've faded away a little bit at the back end, and I think this year will be different, because we've got players who've been missing for a chunk of the season, and they're going to come back fresh. And I think that'll be significant as the season rolls on. I've been thinking that for a while, and I think it even more now. And I just said to the boys there that it doesn't matter who plays in this team, it plays the same way. And I think, you know, that was better than the defensive efforts we were putting in last year for me. You know, we conceded quite a few points, but the attitude and toughness was massive, I thought.
The Feel Better Station for Warrington Hospital.
This is Radio General.
Now, the final hooter.
Yes, this is still the final hooter here on Radio General. We're also the podcast for loverugbyleague.com. I'm Dave Parkinson, delighted to be in the studio this evening, or whenever you're listening to this, with Mr. Steve Manning. Is that a good enough introduction for you, mate?
It's pretty good, that, yeah.
Okay, right, okay.
I'll take the brown envelope off you.
I don't mean to tell anybody about that brown envelope. We'll have everybody that comes into the studio demanding a brown envelope now.
That's all it is, listeners, a brown envelope. It's as thin as they are when there's nothing in them.
Right, let us move on. And there was a world record attempt that was held at the Halliwell Jones Stadium last week. Now, this was all about state of mind. It was the biggest mental health awareness session to be held in the world, and I want to play you this little bit of audio.
This is the end of our mental health, mental fitness Henderson, that means there's one more thing we need to do. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, the current world record stands at 688 people, which was set in Chennai in India. Do you think we've beaten it?
Yeah.
You know we've beaten it, because they're just so quick. Do you think it's higher than 700?
Yeah.
Do you think it's higher than 750? Yeah. Do you think it's higher than 800? Yeah. The figure that I have been given is 857.
Yeah, magnificent total. 857 people attended that mental health awareness session. That's a great effort, isn't it, Steve?
It is. It's fantastic. I know it sounds daft, Dave. I was listening to it, and I know I've read it somewhere, and I've just found it now. What did you have to do to break the world record?
Basically, it was they were counting how many people were in the ground. So the previous record was set at a place in India, 688, I think.
In Chennai,
yes. Yeah. And the 857 was achieved through people coming through the gates. So basically the Halliwell Jones Stadium opened its gates sort of late afternoon, 5 p.m.
Yeah.
For a 6 p.m. start. They had people from the Guinness Book of Records counting folk coming in through the turnstiles. They had video evidence being taken. They had to time it, hence why we had a hooter to signal that it was coming to an end. But it was just a great evening. It was just really, really good, and it was a pleasure to be involved in. A guy that was there, who I was really impressed to speak with as well, was former Warrington, Wakefield and Lee player Ian Knott, who was making his first appearance at the Halliwell Jones Stadium since playing for Lee back in 2005. We're going to hear from him right now. Well, Ian Knott, it's been a while since you've been sat in this ground, hasn't it? The Halliwell Jones Stadium, and we've been part of a world record attempt.
Yes, we have. You know, I can't thank the people for turning out enough. You know, last time I played here was actually for Lee against Warrington, and it's the only time I've actually played in this ground, so you know, to be here and to break a record, I'm made up just a bit.
I mean, Warrington was ingrained in your life for a long, long period, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. I spent nine years at Warrington. You know, best part of me teens, really, and obviously I grew into a man at Warrington. You know, I had to leave, start a new challenge at Wakefield, you know, but I do very much still see myself as being a Warringtonian, even though I am from Oldham.
Yeah, you kind of crossed the boundary there, haven't you, really?
I have, yes. But I suppose it's something to do with, I don't know, if playing at Wilderspool or the Warrington fans. Just, as soon as you play for them, you know, there's not to say that other fans aren't good, you know, but because I spent so much time here, and like I said, I grew up here.
They do take people to the heart, don't they?
They do, they really do. And, you know, they took me to the heart, you know, obviously being a sort of outsider from Oldham, but you know, I did really enjoy my time here, you know, and I'm very grateful for the club.
Back onto this world record attempt. It's a new world record that has been set this evening. Over 850 people in attendance here at the Halliwell Jones Stadium for a mental health awareness session. What's your involvement now with the charity?
Well, I'm just a speaker. I'm a presenter. I basically just talk about my story, you know, from receiving the injury, the operations we had after that, and then basically the consequence of all my operations and the pain that I was in. I did develop depression, and a couple of years down the line I unfortunately, well, not fortunately because it's made me stronger, but I did attempt to take my own life. You know, thankfully I didn't succeed, but from that, obviously I was in a good place, I was getting on well, and then I developed another mental illness because I was concentrating too much on not becoming depressed, and I did start to hear voices, you know, but thankfully everything's under control now, and you know, I'm in a really good place. And for me, state of mind is a way of me getting counselling, you know, because I'm hopefully able to inspire others to offload and talk about their problems.
I think your story is an interesting one, you know, if you don't mind me saying.
Yeah.
And also as well, you know, the fact that people are now speaking about it, because there used to be a time when, you know, you was just a tough guy. Yeah. I've done it myself, yeah. You know, you bottle stuff up, you can only bottle it up for so long, can't yeah. you?
You can. I mean, I've done exactly the same thing, you know, when I first developed the illness, the depression, I knew there was something wrong because I wasn't myself, you know. I'd look at the mirror and I didn't recognise the guy I was looking at, you know, it was as if he had not had already died for me, you know, but I couldn't bring myself to tell my wife or anyone like that, you know, I did exactly the same thing. I'm supposed to be a tough rugby player. You know, I'm supposed to keep things in. That was the norm, because for rugby players at the time, you know, you don't show weakness, you know, if you're playing with injury. And that, like I said, that was just the norm. But we're here now as rugby players to trying to break down that wall, break down that stigma, and hope that other people will open up. If a rugby player can open up, and like I said, I'm not ashamed to cry. You know, I cried for 4 hours straight when I opened up to my wife. You know, if I can do that, then, you know, why can't Joe Bloggs or anyone, you know, surely everyone can. So that's basically what we're trying to do.
And what's been the response to your story when you've sort of gone and told it in front of people?
It's very, it makes it all worthwhile. You know, I'll be honest, the first probably 6 months I started doing it, you know, I was a nervous wreck going, and then when I'd finished it, it was like a huge adrenaline dump. You know, I was knackered for like 3 or 4 days because it took that much out of me. But now I use it as a form of counselling, because the feedback that we get from it, you know, it's in a selfish way, it's very gratifying because it makes me feel good about myself. But all I'm trying to do is hopefully, like I said, inspire other people to talk.
And I think the more that people talk, and you can put this in a sporting context, but you can take it out into the wider world as well, can't you? The more people talk, the better.
Exactly right. You know, it's not just rugby players who keep quiet, you know, like you said yourself, you keep quiet if you've got problems, you know, people at work do, you know, anyone. We don't just do rugby teams now, you know, we have gone out to businesses and workshops and, you know, building sites, schools even, colleges, you know, even young kids, because unfortunately mental health, depression, it doesn't discriminate. Anyone can develop a mental illness, you know, it's just what you do when you do develop that illness, and the quicker you can open up and talk about it, the better.
It's certainly good to see you in a much better place here.
Thank you very much.
What's next for Ian Knott?
Well, next for me, hopefully, is just more state of mind. You know, as regards to my back injury, unfortunately, nothing more can be done about that. I live with a morphine pump now, and it's just a case of monitoring the pain. And, you know, but thankfully, with my depression under control, I'm able to control the pain more and better. So, you know, for me, I just love to do more of the same, because I just love going out and telling my story.
Ian Knott there, glad to hear that he's on the best side of it, and he's using his experience to go out and talk about his issues.
I think it's fantastic, and you've got to say really how brave these people are to do it. And you know, I know that other sports and other organisations have jumped on it in various capacities, but you know, it's another thing where the Rugby Football League took it to heart as such after the tragic passing of Terry Newton. And you know, sometimes we are critical of the governing body, aren't we? But when they do things like this, this is what it's all about. Then this is when we call it, like, you know, the family, and you know, fair play to Ian Knott and other players involved in the state of mind. You know, the positive support that they're getting, and like I said, they're brave enough to, as it were, put the heart on the line, and that's what they're doing, isn't it, Dave?
And we've got the State of Mind round coming up in Super League this week, which sees Salford take on Widnes, sees Huddersfield against Catalans, Leeds against St Helens, Hull against Wigan, and then, strangely, two games on a Sunday. That's not happened in a while, has it? Castleford Tigers against Hull Kingston Rovers, and Wakefield Trinity against Warrington Wolves.
Yeah.
What I want to do is I want to bring Dr. Phil Cooper in at this particular point, because we had a nice chat just regarding the world record attempts and basically his thoughts about the round of Super League coming up now. Well, Phil Cooper, we're stood here in your favourite spot in the Halliwell Jones Stadium, and we're world record holders.
Oh, I tell you, I can't believe it, to be honest. It's just great that people came out. It's a beautiful night. The session went down really well. The players spoke fantastically, and I don't know, just elated really at the moment. So
it was a fascinating session as well, wasn't it, with several different stories emerging from the speakers that you had?
Yeah, I mean, again, they were just short snippets from players, but all had lived experience of mental health problems. Big variety, from psychosis, hearing voices, to low mood and suicide and anxiety. So I think in terms of a mental health awareness session, it was great just to get that personal view alongside just saying this is what a mental health issue is. So I think it just adds to the flavour, and the players loved it. People seemed to respond to it and loved it and listened.
So I wanted to congratulate you personally, because I know when we last spoke you was describing just how much of an effort it is just to get to this stage.
It's been a long road. There's lots of guidelines to go through to get to it. So yeah, it's a big relief that people are walking through the door. Seeing the big queues outside were great, and the way people took part and, you know, used the yes no cards, and fantastic, smashed it.
A quick word about the state of mind round that's coming up in Super League. What have you got planned at each of the venues?
Okay, well, we've got a big man van, a big sort of articulated truck coming up to Salford for the first game against Widnes next Thursday on the 14th. There'll be a barber on there, so if you want to get your hair cut, come on down. There'll be loads of stuff, giveaways, car air fresheners, stress balls, mental fitness cards, more importantly. So you can get down to the Salford Widnes game. Great stuff. Come and see us and say hello. It'll be over at Leeds and Hull on Saturday. And finally on Castleford, on the field in front of the ground, on the training paddock, as long as it doesn't rain, of course.
So it's doing some mileage, isn't it, over the weekend?
Yeah, very much so. And I think just having a physical presence and having volunteers wearing T-shirts at the games, again, it just normalises the fact that, you know, mental fitness is really important, and we all have mental difficulties and injuries throughout our lives. So anything that gets the message across, and the players wearing the T-shirt, fantastic. And hopefully it'll save lives.
And we should all keep talking about it as well, shouldn't we, Steve?
Yeah, we've got to push the message over, and as you've just said, it's good to talk, and it's the days of, you know, this match with them have gone, hasn't it? You know, you keep everything to yourself, but I think that's what unfortunately guys tend to do. You know, the job I had previously to this, you know, that, you know, that word stress, you know, you'd have people going off with stress now because of the culture that they're in. You'd laugh and say, they're not wrong with them. Because that's the sort of culture, you know, that I was involved in, sort of thing. But, you know, whether they were, as it was swinging the lead, or whether it was genuine, and I don't know. But, you know, you see the calibre of the person, you think, there's nothing wrong with him. But it's there, isn't it? And like I say, I've been saying how brave people are, and I'm saying, like, I was dissing them in my previous job. But again, it's how it was. I mean, times have changed.
They've moved forward.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah.
The Feel Better Station for Warrington Hospital.
This is Radio General.
Now, the final hooter.
Right, let us crack on as well, because you was at a big press event earlier today, wasn't you, involving Rob Elston, the new CEO of Super League. And you also had a chat with Eamon McManus as well. I wanted to get to the crux of it, though, because, you know, we're hearing all kinds of rumours. We've been hearing all kinds of rumours in rugby league about how the structure's going to go. What did you hear today?
Well, Robert Elston has said a few words, and then Ian Lanigan, who was on the outside, he wasn't, as it were, hosting it on the outside, and basically put three points. The most important point was
yes, I know.
Is that whilst the television deal is ongoing for the next 3.5 years, the funding won't change for the Super League clubs and the Tier 2 and Tier 3 clubs. And it's estimated that for those, they get £5 million a year in relation to the television deal at the moment. That's going to carry on. When it comes to the new deal in 3.5 years' time, which will be led by the Super League clubs rather than the governing body, they're going to try and get the same amount that they can get, and at which point they will then try and, as it were, help out the Tier 2 and Tier 3 sides. But they're expecting that they may well not. So
what's that going to mean? Less money for everybody?
That's going to mean they're going to get the money because they see that as the vehicle. Super League is the be-all and end-all.
See, I'm going to come at this from a championship point of view, because if they take the money out of the championship, what are they going to achieve? That's just going to drop, and you're going to have clubs folding left, right and centre, and these Super League head honchos don't seem to bother about it.
Well, it's all about self, self, self as such, Dave. And, you know, the Super League club are saying, this is what drives it. This is where all the income comes. This is what everybody watches. This is what everybody wishes to see. And they've got to get the best deal that's the best deal for the Super League sides. They weren't happy about how it was being, as it were, delivered by the governing body. They want to work with the governing body, but they've said that, you know, we will be negotiating the deal. And I did put it to Ian Lanigan, well, in that case, would it be
possible will the RFL be driving, as it were, for the Championship and Championship One clubs. They said, well, they may well do that, but, you know, we will try and do what we can on their behalf, and if need be, we will help them and assist them with a view to getting money. It is a worrying thing that what is going to happen at the end of three and a half years. The other important point was that a particular chairman was asked about the changes a few months ago, and he dissed the journalist that he was talking to and saying this isn't going to happen because the Sky deal and this and this and this and that. But from next year, this is it's going to be, the structure is going to be, we're not having a middle eights and we're not having a super eights.
What?
We're not having those. First of all, it's too complicated. One of the reasons for the super eights as such was the fact that they were criticising the fact that once round 23 is gone, nobody knows who's playing when or what, and people can't plan for their holidays, etc., etc., etc.
Okay.
So the master plan is that for next season, for 2019, each side will play each other, so that's 22 games.
Yeah, like that. That's great.
And then you've got the magic game, which I suppose you could call a neutral game, and then each side will play 6 games to round it up.
Hang on, you've confused me again. Is that going to be based on league structure or league positions?
I think what they're going to do is basic on the league positions at the end of this season.
Maybe
so you're going to have your bottom six, and then you're going to have your you know, your top six, and they're going to sort out the fixtures that way, and that's how it's going to work. They're going to have a grand for the grand final. They're not sure whether they're going to have a four team structure or a fifth team structure. The most important thing is that they're keeping relegation. But from that point of view,
be thankful then as Championship clubs.
Well, it's going to be a dog eat dog day, because only one side is going to get promoted, only one side is going to get relegated. Now, to me, common sense is, and I'm, you know, no such thing as that in rugby league, is there, that I would assume that the side that finishes top of the pile at the end of the Championship season will play the side that finishes bottom of the Super League. And that side will be promoted provided they cover the criteria of, you know, what's expected of them, you know, the sustainability. So we've got that. There was something else, but those basically the main points. But it's all out in the open now, because they've made these decisions. There are 11 out of the 12 clubs in agreement with this, and everything's there. Where we'll be in 3.5 years' time, I don't know. Well, Robert Elston, congratulations on the appointment. It's probably been one of the biggest kept secrets possible for a couple of months.
I think that's true. I probably started talking to the clubs. I don't know whether they should come. You're getting an exclusive here. I probably, around Man of Steel last October, a few of the clubs said, when are you coming home and back into rugby league? They feel a bit like coming home. And nothing really happened then. I said, listen, never rule anything out. And then it started again, sort of February, March time, and I knew there was something in the offing, and in sport nothing stays a secret for long, as you've said, and it did leak, and then there was something. I think it might have been one of the newspapers, and I thought, I've got to go and see the board and chairman. I went down to see the chairman, and that was a tough, difficult conversation, because I've been there so long, you know, I got so much affection for the football club. It was difficult in that regard, but I'm here now. It's confirmed. Everton confirmed it 2 or 3 weeks ago. We announced it about a week ago, so but hey ho. Today's been fantastic, meeting the press and getting the ball really rolling, but I'm really keen now we roll our sleeves up and get stuck into the job.
I think we talk a lot about, whether it be sports or whatever, about open and transparency. In this afternoon's meeting, it's been open and transparent.
Yeah.
What the board of directors want, what the chairman want, yeah, and what your remit is. Yeah. So that any Chinese whispers, yeah, they've really gone, haven't they? And it's, you know, it's you start your remit, as it were, tomorrow, albeit you've had a look at the papers this last week.
Yeah. No, absolutely right. I think, you know, the most important stakeholders in our game, you know, fans and players. And fans need to know what's happening with their game. They have a right to know what's happening in the game. We ask them to be loyal. We ask them to come and watch. We ask them to stay loyal and come with us. If you're keeping them in the dark about what's happening, then, you know, that ain't going to work. So, you know, one of the things at Everton was absolutely about fan engagement, about communication. The same applies in this job. We have to be open, transparent, communicative. Now, there are times when we won't always be able to do that. And if we're not doing that, there's probably a good reason for it. But you know, you're absolutely right. Today's been good. We've set the scene. We've set the course for the new organisation, and now we just have to deliver it. It's the hard bit, as I said. You know, it's visions are dead easy for me. You know, we just want a fantastic sport, a sustainable sport, loved by all. You know, a sport the fans are proud of. You know, those words are relatively cheap. You know, the hard bit is making it happen, and you know, we need some leadership, we need some unity, we all need to be positive. I said to somebody before, you know, as a game, when we're in a group, we all look inwards and we start moaning and fighting and complaining, then we turn outwards and we can't understand why the rest of the world don't get it. We've got to change both mentalities. When we look inwards, we've got to be more positive. When we look outwards, we've got to be more better at listening, because you know, you're in a room with 10 other people and they're not rugby league fans, and you think you're the only one who gets it. Well, we have to change that mentality and work a bit harder and understand what bits of it they don't, you know, buy into, because that's going to be the key to success.
I mean, it's still, as way as I look at it personally, still one of the best kept secrets in the country, this, and rightly or wrongly, it's motorway driven, and we're trying to expand, sort of thing. But from your own point of view in your tenure, or as such, for short term, long, medium term, long term, where would you like to be in relation to the position you've got now in 12 months' time, to say?
I think there are a number of priorities. I think very quickly we have to do better at filling our stadiums. You know, ultimately the broadcasters in particular, and it's the broadcasters that deliver the biggest single check, the broadcasters want to see fuller stadiums, and we've got to work harder at that. There isn't an easy fix on that, and that's about working really, really hard. And you know, things we did at Everton around community, around engagement, we've got to fill our stadiums better. Now, that's more of a club led, I think the clubs carry the responsibility, but the centre has to be strong about messaging, about brand, about selling what we're all about. The second thing is growth in terms of partnerships. So at the point at which partnerships become available within Super League, we've got to go to the market with a fantastic product, well packaged, responding to what the market wants. So when we get that opportunity, we're going to be really good at it. In the more medium longer term, you know, the game's future ultimately depends on the next TV deal, and there's phenomenal opportunity within the TV market. It's changing rapidly. There are more and more opportunities, but those opportunities are only relevant if you've got a great product. So if you've got a poor product, then those opportunities are worth nothing. So we've got to invest in the product and then take advantage of this rapidly emerging and exciting media market. So, you know, short term is, you know, let's see some growth in, you know, filling the stadium. Let's grab hold of some of these partnership deals. You know, we've got great partners. You know, when Fred Doan at Super League said, you know, this is the best spot I've ever worked with, what a fantastic endorsement. We've got to grow that and sell that and deliver it. And then ultimately it's about finding the right broadcast mix for our game going forward.
Interesting, interesting. We're going to go to Eamon McManus's interview with Steve.
Well, Eamon McManus, everything's out in the home now. So before talking about that, your thoughts on the appointment of Robert Elston as the Chief Executive for Super League Europe?
My thoughts on Robert's appointment is he's absolutely the right person at absolutely the right point in time. What we're looking to do is improve every aspect of Super League, whether it's the quality of the players on the field, the number of spectators, the number and quality of our commercial partnerships, our media valuation. Everything has to be improved, and we can only do that by having a dedicated, high-quality, highly professional, highly relevant management team that is focused entirely on Super League to improve its returns. And there couldn't be any better person than Robert. If you look at his background over the last 20 years, he's highly credible, highly professional, with immense experience in the media, in sport and in business, supplemented by a real passion and knowledge of rugby league.
And I think you said there, you know, obviously, you know, we're not as popular a sport as we were about 5-10 years ago.
We've still got that core of loyal supporters, because we have a great game that is steeped in the history of the towns in which it's played and supported. But you've got to compare yourself with your peer group in business, and our peer group is the NRL in Australia, Premier Rugby Union in this country, and actually Club Rugby Union worldwide, because we're all competing for the same elite athletes. We're all competing for the same global TV audience. We're all competing for the same media funding. And a gap has opened up over the last 5 to 10 years between us and our competitor businesses, and we've got to close it. And we believe we can only do that by having a management that is dedicated to improving Super League. Hence why we're doing what we're doing and when we're doing it before it's too late.
What you are doing, there's been the whispers whether it's going to come in this new structure, but it's coming in 2019. The Super 8s are going, yep. The top 8s are going, promotion will be one up, one down, and then you've got your playoffs to tinker with.
That's the unanimous view of Super League. We want that changed, and we need to kind of dot the I's, cross the T's with the RFL and come to the necessary arrangements with them. But that's definitely the view of Super League.
And then finally, as such for now, again, for the next 3.5 years, whatever the funding is at the moment for the Tier 2 and Tier 3 clubs, that's staying. But it obviously all changes on the new TV deal, which I would imagine will be driven by Super League Europe, Robert and yourselves.
Yeah, it'd be driven by Robert. He's our chief executive. But there's been an awful lot of misinformation around of late, and we've said to the championship clubs, we've met them all, we've explained what we're trying to do, why we're trying to doing it, and we've said that annual funding of, I think it's around £5 million a year from Super League, which is committed to the championship. That's an awful lot of money.
Yeah.
That will continue during the tenure of this deal. We will then be negotiating a new deal, which we will hopefully be better, but we've got to get our product right beforehand to put us in a position to do so. And we continue to realise that, you know, we have a game to look after here, but we have to prioritise the performance and value of Super League, because that's the commercial entity that drives the game. If you don't have a successful Super League, you won't have an international game, you won't have a Challenge Cup, you won't have a championship. So we've got to improve that in order for everyone to benefit.
Steve, thanks for all your efforts this evening.
Thank you.
That's absolutely fantastic. Great to see you again. Hope we can get you in a little bit more often.